When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
A 1, 2, 3, 4.
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by Diddy TV. Visit DiddyTV.com for more exclusive on-demand content or download the official Diddy TV app from your app store today. Welcome to Insights, everyone. Our guest on the show this hour is Micah Nelson, a.k.a. The Particle Kid, whose latest LP, Time Capsule, is an experimental, genre-bending work we highly recommend you hear. The album features contributions from Margot Price, Jay Maskus, Jim James, Sean Ono Lennon, and even Willie Nelson. As one of Willie's sons, Micah grew up surrounded by music, but the sounds he creates today are as much inspired by freak folk, punk, or avant-garde sentiments as the country and Americana music the Nelson name is known for. Time Capsule was recorded in many different places with many different people over several years, and Micah shares all about that process in today's interview. Let's dig into the conversation, and we'll catch up again at the end. From Diddy TV, here's The Particle Kid with Amy Wright, right here on Insights.
Hi, Micah.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Are you on tour?
Yeah, I'm out singing and playing guitar with my dad right now. We just did a few shows in New Braunfels, we're doing Arkansas, and then we do Oklahoma City, Wichita, and Camden. Is that
Camden?
Camden Town. And then I think that's the run.
Well, we're going to get to your new album, Time Capsule, here in just a little bit. But I wanted to go back a ways. Where did you actually grow up? Was that more in Maui then? Were you in Hawaii or?
Until I was about 8 years old, we were in Texas mostly. And, you know, when I say in Texas, that's where we would attend school. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd be on the road. And then after that, we started going to school in Maui. And that was more or less the main home base for about 10 years, even though we, you know, in the summers, especially we'd go back out on the road, or, you know, we'd be in Texas sometimes because we have family in different parts of the country. But for the most part, I grew up, you know, a lot of the formative years when not on the road were on Maui.
What were you doing as a kid? I know you, obviously everyone knows your dad is Willie, so there's music in the house, I'm assuming, all the time. But were you playing?
I started playing harmonica in his band when I was about 3 years old. You know, I could barely walk, and I was just standing up there playing harmonica next to Mickey, his actual harmonica player, Mickey Raphael, who everyone thought was my dad because we both had crazy hair playing harmonica. You know, and to me, I just didn't think about it. I was just kind of like, this is what's happening. And this is one way I can hang out and be close to my dad and do what he's doing, you know? And, but eventually they would hand me a mic, you know, I'd take a solo. And I learned my left from right from the harmonica. You know, Mickey said the high notes are on the right and the low notes are on the left. My brother and I both kind of grew up playing in his band, you know, in various roles. at one point he actually, you know, he wanted to do it too. And so he started, I think, playing percussion, you know, with Billy back there. And we were on the road a lot of the time back then anyway. So it was just kind of, okay, let's play with that. You know, and then eventually it was like, okay, you have to actually attend school for this days if you want to go to the next level. So we would, you know, any chance we got, we would go out there. But then, you know, when you get to be 10, 11 years old, music, your perception of music and the meaning of music and all of that takes on a new depth. And, you know, I think we sort of rediscovered rock and roll and classic rock and psychedelic rock. And so that's when my brother picked up the guitar. I think we were like 9 and 10. And he started getting really into the guitar. And I decided, well, I should play the drums. I should learn how to play the drums. So then, you know, that would make sense, because then we could play together. And that's how we learned music, was just spending hours and hours every day jamming together in the back room. And I remember the moment we realized we weren't just making noise, we were playing music. I had learned the, you know, the boots and cats beat, boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats. And I would just kind of see how long I could do that without dropping it. And Luke was next to me on the couch, and he was going, and I was like, oh, that's like the Kinks song. You know, you really got me. And so when we combined those things, boots and cats and boots and cats, and we're like, whoa, we're making music. This is amazing. Ah, it was that first feeling of like the thing that keeps you wanting to play music with people forever is like, you know, it's like getting high for the first time. You're just like, this is a whole nother, this is what it feels like, you know? And I remember that because my mom got so excited, probably because she was about to lose her mind, you know, just banging and noise making for so long. Finally, there's some cohesiveness to what's happening. And she called my dad, hey, they don't suck, you know, check it out. And that was a great moment. We just kind of taught each other music, recording. That was also around the time that like GarageBand came out, you know, the program on your laptop where you could make home recordings. And this is the whole MySpace era where it's like people were first realizing they could make music at home. There were consumer priced recording software and you could figure it out even if you were an idiot and then put it out. And I don't think we really put anything out at that point, but we definitely experimented a lot with recording. You know, we would set a couple mics up and I'd play drums, he'd play guitar, and then I'd lay a bass on top of it or maybe a keyboard thing, and then we'd sing harmonies together and we would just write this way and just figure out how it all works. And that's what we did. That was our main focus for a long time. Still is now. We're just kind of doing the same thing, you know, with our own projects and everything, but it's an endless well of discovery.
I read that you and your dad sort of bonded over Django Reinhardt.
Oh yeah. I love Django Reinhardt. And I learned about him from my dad because it's his guitar hero, his Django. Someone once said, I think it was Nora Jones, she said, Willie is like Django with one finger. You know, Django had two fingers at a certain point. Yeah. As his fingers got melted off in the caravan fire. And I definitely I'm super inspired by the way my dad plays. Like even now, like every night, I'm just like, I'll be playing next to him and he'll do these runs on the guitar, or these sort of, I think of it like, it's like splatter paint or something to me. Like I always thought of him as like the Jackson Pollock of guitar, because he's just intuitively doing these completely outside the box, completely off grid, you know. It's like a crazy bird, and he's just like flying around, and you're like, how are you going to land this thing? You know? And you're just along for the ride with him. And somehow he just always lands back on his feet. And he got that from Django. I think that gypsy jazz style, playing. That's just so, it's so technical, but that's, you don't even think about how technical it is because it's so musical. And it's coming from such a melodic place. And that's, you know, if there's anything that, you know, I hope I inherited, it's that of like somehow never playing that melody the exact same way each night, and just constantly inventing new feelings and ideas and new ways to stretch time and take the listener along for this emotional ride with just melodies, you know?
Well, you talked about earlier the fact that you enjoy making movies, and that's always been a part of what you do. You're a visual artist, and you're a musician. So how do you kind of decide what you're doing each day, or how does that one dominate the other, I should say? Is it by project, or?
There's a great Basquiat quote, the painter Basquiat, where he said something like, art is how we decorate space, and music is how we decorate time. And I've always sort of suspected that space and time, you know, our perception of their separateness is more or less an illusion. And in that way, I feel the same way about art and music, that they're coming from the same source. And so I think I'm decorating space time, you know. They're all, anytime I have a visual idea or a musical idea, I find it very easy for the visual side or the sonic side of whatever this idea is, to just kind of effortlessly, symbiotically find a place in the project. There's rarely one without the other for me. So, you know, it's like whatever I'm working on, whether it's an album or a painting or an animation, or, you know, it always seems to be a combination of the sonic and the visual somehow involved. It's just kind of the same thing. I don't really think too much about it. It just happens that way.
So when did you actually form Particle Kid, your band?
It's like, I don't know if I'd call it a band. You know, if I'm lucky, I have a few friends who are available to play the songs. but I started recording under the name Particle Kid. I must have been about 17 or 18. And it started out just as exploring sonic experimental ideas in recording. And I made this track. It was one of the first things I recorded. It was I just made like a violin plucking loop. And then I took a bunch of field recordings I'd made of all sorts of things, my friends laughing or, you know, insects flying by my head or whatever, and chopped it up and made rhythms out of it. And, you know, I was really interested in sound collaging, and I made this whole sort of epic track, and I put it out on, I think back then the thing was SoundCloud was the thing. And not that long afterward, I got this email from some radio station in France, and they wanted to play my track on their show. And I was like, wow. You know, suddenly I realized like, oh, this isn't just wanking, you know. To me, I was just kind of enjoying exploring these ideas and seeing if I could do it. And that inspired me to keep going and keep exploring that. And, you know, so that project, Particle Kid, it started out as sonic experimentations. And at a certain point, it became the sort of central vehicle for all of my ideas, because I needed something that was focused, singular, that all of the visual and animated and musical ideas, whatever it happened to be, could all kind of live on the same spaceship together. And it also helped me realize at a certain point, because I was playing in, you know, seven bands, and I was saying yes to everything and doing a million things and spreading myself so thin, that, you know, I thought, well, I should focus this, and I should sort of focus on one of these things, and what's the thing that all of the other things can kind of fit inside of. And I realized music was that thing, you know, as opposed to focusing on being a painter or focusing on being a filmmaker, because music, whether you're on stage or whether you're making an album or a music video, it can involve the visual. It can involve all of the other stuff I like to do. You know, it can all fuel that spaceship, but the engine is music. And, you know, if I really want to do this for the long run, how can the music survive? And I realized at a certain point that something I probably already knew, just hadn't really quite realized fully, was that songs are the thing that can last through time. You know, like, I remember seeing Roger Waters' show. It's epic, you know, just theatrical, like, you know, he's got a fucking football field sized screen, and like there's like smokestacks and the, you know, puppets, and it's like this opera, and you know, incredible visuals, and it's like amazing. And I started thinking, like, the thing that makes that show what it is not the show itself, it's the songs. You know, if those Pink Floyd songs were not these just timeless classic songs that, you know, Roger Waters could be up there with the acoustic guitar singing these songs, and we'd all still be singing along and having a great time. It would be an amazing show, even if there was nothing up there, no flashing lights or anything. And I thought, that's the most powerful, most potent thing is songs that speak to people, that are universal, that are coming from an honest place. And if you've got that, then you can do anything with that. You could have a big epic psychedelic visual show along with it, and it'll only make it better, you know. But if it was just the visuals show, it's like you'd forget about it a week later. It'd be like a cool psychedelic crazy light show, but it, you know, it wouldn't stay with you if it didn't have great songs. So that pushed me to focus more on on writing songs and challenging myself to be able to perform a set of music without anything but a guitar or a piano or something, and see if I could translate the feelings that I wanted to express in the music without any production or bells and whistles or frosting and sprinkles, which I love, but what's the heart of it? You know, let's get back to the source. And so it's been a journey of, you know, I think seeking the source and finding these little moments along the way and turning them into songs.
So yeah. If Particle Kid is you, then what does it mean, or who came up with that nickname for you?
I think I was about 14 and I had just gotten home from school and I was playing Mario Kart on the N64. And my dad had been in the poker room and he came into the room. And I don't know if it was, if he was stoned or if it was just Southern drawl, but he said, "Welcome home, Particle Kid." And I just thought it was like the funniest, most random thing ever. And it just kind of stuck. When I started this project and called it Particle Kid years later, and I started sharing songs with him and he was really into it. And, you know, he asked me like, what's Particle Kid? And I was like, you don't remember? It's like, I told him about it and he was cracking up because he, this moment, and he had meant to say, "Welcome home, prodigal son." But he probably said prodigal kid, but you know, the way I heard it was Particle Kid.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great name for anything, you know, but that I remembered that moment and I decided to call this project Particle Kid. So he named that. He named the project.
Well, I was kind of wondering when I first saw Particle Kid if the eclectic style of your music was sort of partly reflective of Particle Kid being the name. Because you have an eclectic style. How would you describe it?
Eclectic is a good...
Yeah?
I think, you know, that's maybe another... was another force inside of me encouraging me to simplify things, you know. It's like, because I have so much love for so much music of all kinds from all over different times, and there's something about almost every era of music that I love and I draw from, and I hear that and I'm like, oh, I want to try that, you know. And so it all just sort of sneaks in somehow. I never growing up traveling around all over the place, I never felt like I really had like, this is my scene, you know, and I'm one of these kids. And I, you know, it was just kind of like, I'd sort of experienced these things and absorbed them and they became part of me. But, you know, as far as like my identity or whatever, like I don't really know if I could bottle that down into like a particular thing. So maybe there's something else to the name Particle Kid that works in that way. Where, you know, it's lots of things that appear separate, but they're part of the whole, which is whatever I'm doing. I thought, you know, okay, if I can strip everything down to its bare minimum, that'll help me develop something that can tie all of this, all of these ideas together into something that's cohesive. Yeah.
Let's talk about Time Capsule, because this is your latest album, and it was written and recorded over a few years, right?
Yeah, maybe 5 or 6 years of ideas half written or songs that were recorded and never ended up on anything, or songs that I had started writing and didn't finish until years later. And then as well as brand new songs that had just been written, you know, the day before going into the recording studio and cutting them. So it's like a big journal of moments in time. And I decided that they should all just fit inside of one release, like a time capsule of all these different memories.
Were you writing and recording during COVID? I mean, were you by yourself or were you with other people? How was that working?
We were in Texas when it was March 2020. We went down there to play the Luck Reunion. And I had Aaron Davis with me and Tony Peluso, bass and drums. These are friends that I've played with for a long time that, you know, for the past few years have been kind of the core members of Particle Kid, live band. And we had been messing with some new song ideas, and I said, well, let's go down to Texas a week in advance, and we'll go into the Pedernales studio, cut some new stuff. And as we were in the studio recording, the shit was hitting the fan, and it was like, oh, this is happening now. It definitely influenced the session. You know, a lot of the songs that actually, I think most of the songs that we cut during that session, we did, you know, maybe two takes, and a lot of them, the first take is what ended up on the record. It was very much like, oh, I don't know how much longer we're, you know, there was this urgency to it that added a great sort of rawness that I really love about those recordings. But I ultimately ended up having to cut the session short. I said, I got to fly you guys home like tomorrow, because I don't know if in a week you'll be able to fly home, which turned out to be true. So they got out of there in the nick of time. But I was then stuck in Texas for like 2 or 3 months. but we got some really great stuff. We did Velociraptor, The Serpent Flew. We did All One Day, Shadow of the Sun. And we did American Life and Thirk's Day, that song. We just kind of cranked in that session. It was just like, we didn't think too much about it. And I think there's something to that, just not thinking too much about it. And, you know, like a lot of those songs that ended up on the record from that session were just like, the band was learning the song as we're recording it. And that's what ended up on the album. It just had the thing. You know, sometimes the thing doesn't necessarily mean perfectly everything, you know, everyone knows their part perfectly and it's sung beautifully and it's quantized, you know. Sometimes the energy you're looking for is something a lot more raw, and sometimes that's more human and relatable. And it definitely was truer to the feeling of the whole moment. And there were a couple other songs we tried to cut that I don't think ended up on the album. But you know, it was so lucky to have that situation, you know, being quarantined in a recording studio where you can you can work, you know, you're not just kind of sitting there thinking about doom. It's kind of like, oh, we have this outlet that's creative and we can focus on this mutual goal together of making great music. And, you know, I'm feel lucky that we, out of all the places we could have been when everything got shut down, to have been there. And then also subsequently being in Texas with my family, you know, I can't even remember the last time we were able to be together for that extended period of time in a place where, we also could go and make music in the studio down the street. So we probably made, you know, 3 or 4 albums during lockdown and, you know, stuff we'd wanted to do for years, but I'm touring over here, he's touring over there, dad's touring over, you know, and occasionally we get to meet up and play the same show, but it was a lot more rare back then. So that was one of the silver linings.
Wouldn't you say that to some degree, recording a song in a studio where you're now putting that song out there, that's a time capsule in and of itself, because the more you play a song, the more it evolves and it might be arranged differently. But at some point you got to lock it in, and that's the recording, and that's what people are going to hear. So that's a time capsule also.
Absolutely. That what you just described is kind of what gave me the idea in the first place was, you know, we're sitting there making this music, and you know, the world is ending or whatever, and we're like, man, I just thought that, you know, this, what we're doing right now, like we're gonna be able to listen to this music and we're gonna remember this moment, you know, it's like a newspaper clipping from that day, you know. And then I was like, well, I guess every album is like that, you know, just every work of art, every album that we put out, it's a snapshot of that time. And music is sort of the closest thing we have to time travel in that way, because you hear a song and you instantly teleport to where you were whenever that song impacted you, you know, your consciousness travels. And so then that started churning all these ideas about how to release this music. And I think I immediately decided the album would be called Time Capsule. I knew that the second, you know, what you just described popped in my head. And then eventually it was like, I had all these different songs from these different sessions from, you know, some of them recorded in a nice studio, some of them recorded in a hotel room, some were recorded in my bedroom, some were recorded in LA, some in Austin, some here and there. And I thought, well, you know, I guess these few songs will be an EP here. And, you know, I'm talking with the label, you know, these few songs, they fit together. So they'll, maybe we'll put out a series of EPs. And then when COVID happened, it was like, I just want to put this all out. I just want to get it out. I don't want to wait. I don't know how much time we have left. Like, just like get your affairs in order and put out what you've got. And the more I thought about the time capsule concept, I thought, well, if I call the album Time Capsule, I can kind of put anything in there because it's all from these different times inside of one vessel. And then it became, you know, it was like a quadruple album all of a sudden. And the label wanted to do vinyl, but it would have been a, you know, 4 to 6 disc vinyl, which nobody had any money. Nobody was like, and then also it takes forever these days for vinyl to be manufactured. So they're like, you got any ideas about what else we could do? And I just thought, well, why don't we make time capsules? We'll, you know, I'll make time capsules and we'll put a thumb drive of the album and the videos and all the content inside of this time capsule. And we'll put a ticket in there. That's a ticket to the concert in 20 years, you know, to just continue this time capsule theme, and it'll be an interactive thing, and it'll be something that, you know, the album itself is something that we can look back on 20 years from now, and, you know, it also gives us something to look forward to and a reason to stay alive so we can play this show. And that ultimately became the ticket, is general admission for any show from January 1st to December 31st of the year 2042, you know, so in 20 years, the whole year, you can go to any Particle Kid show that you want. And, so there's 20 of these time capsules, and the label loved the idea, and it was something that I could just do myself, and we wouldn't have to rely on manufacturers in Germany or anything like that. And I thought, well, I can also tie in my, activism around industrial hemp, because I started thinking, what's a material that can stand the test of time? Hempcrete. You know, I'd been working with hempcrete, and I'd grown up being taught about the benefits of hemp, you know, the thousands of different sustainable products that could be made from that crop. I had recently started working with it and growing my own hemp and experimenting with this industrial product. And I had discovered that it's really easy and I could make this. Why don't I make the time capsules out of hempcrete so that they'll last 1,000 years and they're fireproof and, you know, mold resistant. And then it'll give me an opportunity to talk about hemp and the benefits of hemp as far as, you know, our supposed goals of healing the soil and sequestering carbon and returning value back to the American economy and the agricultural sector and giving farmers work and destigmatizing plants, especially plants that can
heal,
not help us divest from mm-hmm. fossil fuels and heal people and, you know, create food, fuel, fiber, medicine, all of the above, while phytoremediating soil. And, you know, you can build your house with it. And so I was like, oh, perfect. I can combine all of these things into one project. And so that's Time Capsule.
You know, the other thing I thought about when I was thinking about the Time Capsule was that lyrics are also one of those time capsules that potentially reflect where an artist is in their career or their life. If nothing else, if it's not about you, you're commenting on what's going on. And I've always thought it was interesting because when you have to play the same song for the next 40 years, for example, then you're also kind of reliving that moment, you know, that was caught on paper.
Yeah, yeah. You better like what you're singing. You better like your own music. Because if other people love it and it becomes, mm-hmm. you know, any in any way popular enough to where people will pay you to sing your songs, you know, you better enjoy it and feel honest with it and like it's you speaking. So that's something that I think is really important. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too how when songs are coming from that place, even if the arrangements and the lyrics don't change over time, the way that they speak to us change often. You know, we hear music at a certain age, at a certain time in our life, and it just doesn't enter in the same way as maybe 10, 20 years later. you know, not just for the listener, but I think for the songwriter as well. You know, especially if the lyrics are coming from this subconscious place where I often don't know what I'm talking about. I couldn't really like describe specifically what certain lyrics are about. Some I can, but you know, a lot of it is like, it's just coming from a feeling. It's coming from this almost random, you know, just pulling it out of the radio waves and it just, here it is. And it feels right. So it must, it seems to express the feeling, even if it's hard to describe exactly literally what those words are saying. And then to have, you know, years later, suddenly you kind of realize what it was saying. And sometimes it feels like it's you from the future talking to yourself, you know? And it, you have to kind of live through more of your life to understand what your subconscious was communicating. I've had the same experience with stream of consciousness drawing, something I've always done, but especially when I was a teenager, I got really into, like, you know, I would like eat acid or something and I would just draw and I wouldn't think about what I was drawing at all. And hours later I'd look at it and it'd be like, what is that? You know, all these imagery and these characters and the story happening in this drawing. It's so strange. But over time I would glance at it and I would be like, that's what I was saying. And, you know, it was like, it was almost like my thoughts and the brain sneeze. It was coming out faster than my mind could even process the meaning of it. And, you know, I definitely wouldn't have been able to articulate it in any verbal way. And so thank God for drawings and paintings. And, you know, if those don't fully express it, if those don't quite make it, then, you know, we've got animations, and if those don't fully express it, we can add music to it. And, you know, you get to a place where, you know, I mean, words fail me all the time. And so I just feel so lucky to have these other languages that can communicate so much more than words can. And especially working from a place of just drawing from the subconscious, and letting that speak without analyzing it when it comes out. It's like, you can analyze it later, you know, and that's how I write songs too. I'll just throw the clay down. This feels right. And then you can always sculpt it after the clay is on the table. But I try not to hinder the process as it's happening. You know, David Lynch always says, you know, you have to write down every great idea immediately or it'll be gone forever. And he's absolutely right.
Well, you have an amazing opportunity. The album Time Capsule is really great. I would tell everyone to go get a copy, listen to it. Go see you on tour. Go see you live when they have the opportunity. Micah, it was such a pleasure talking to you about the new album and your life in general. And come see us in Memphis.
Yeah, I'd love to. I love Memphis. It'd be great to hang out in Memphis. And, you know, if you're ever up in the Redwoods, come by. We'll go on a hike.
Well, you guys, and you're newlyweds, right? I mean, sort of newlywed.
Three or 4 years now, 3 years.
You're newlyweds.
Yeah, yeah. In the span of weds, we are new, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, good luck with your life and in general, and we'll see you very soon.
Hope so. Thanks so
much.
Take
care, Micah. Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks so much to The Particle Kid, a.k.a. Micah Nelson, for taking time to chat with us today about his life and his latest work, Time Capsule. Check out the album as soon as possible, and be sure to tell a friend or two to do the same. From all of us at Diddy TV, thanks again for tuning in today, and we hope to see you again real soon, right here on Insights.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.